Thanks, everybody, for listening to The Sure Thing. It is December 7th today. Warren and Ryan with you today. Also, Pearl Harbor Day. I feel like I said that last year when we did it. On this day, we'll talk about the NFL. We'll talk about the college football playoff. They are set and everything that happened from the weekend ahead. And I'm going to assume Ryan didn't watch the F1 race, but I want to talk about it because it was pretty incredible. And we have a championship showdown coming up on Sunday morning. Check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app under the podcast section. Ryan, how is it? How's it going over there?
You know, we're making it, man. It was a wild weekend. Started Friday. I was getting my teeth cleaned by Jamie. So that's already, you know, kind of tough start to begin with. But I go to leave the dental office and my truck won't start. Come to find out, it's my battery. My battery's just like completely dead, won't even take a jump. So it started with that. Then it's kind of progressively went downhill from there. But you know what? We're here. I was right about Alabama. So that kind of made everything all better. Washington won. You know, we can always find the bright spots in the dark days.
Yes, yes, you can. All right, we'll get to the college football. Yeah, Alabama beat Georgia. Georgia blows another 10-point lead to Alabama. They had chances in the second half, but they just couldn't. Stenson Bennett couldn't get it done. And I texted my cousin's husband, who I was watching the Auburn game with last weekend, and he's from Atlanta, so I feel like there are two types of Alabama fans. He also went to Alabama. So, like, the Alabama fans that are from Georgia, that go to school from, that are Alabama fans, go to school and grew up in, like, Georgia, the Atlanta area, their biggest rival or their biggest hatred is Georgia.
Yeah.
And then everybody else, like, is the Iron Bowl. They hate Auburn. I mean, he doesn't like Auburn, but the biggest one is Georgia. And even on Sunday or Saturday when I was with them, I even told them, I was like, look, they'll win this game and they'll probably beat Georgia because that's what they do. Like, I hope they don't. I still think Georgia's going to win, but you could totally see it. And then I texted him I don't know, like the third quarter, that this is just a typical Georgia performance. And it was. Look, the first quarter, they're up 10-0, and it didn't look like Alabama was going to be able to do anything with the ball. They couldn't do anything. Then they had Jameson Williams pass. Kind of jump starts everything and set them up. It really was just the third quarter, really, when they scored 24 points and they got the double score. That was the biggest thing, was getting the double score. You're like, all right. Everybody knew that Georgia scored too quickly at the end of the first half, and then it was the double score that kind of sealed it. But look, that was the best game. That was the best game Alabama's played all season. I don't think there's any denying that. The offensive line transformation was remarkable. Watch if you go watch the LSU game, the Arkansas game, and the Auburn game, and watch the offensive line play in those three games by Alabama, and then watch the Georgia game. It is stunning how they could turn around play in 5 days against a Georgia defensive line. It was shocking. That the offensive line won them that game. There's no doubt the offensive line won them that game. So good job to Bill O'Brien or whoever the offensive line is. I think Doug Marrone might be the offensive line coach there.
I believe he is, yeah.
So Doug Marrone figuring out whatever the offensive line did or whoever it was, figured out, because the offensive line play, and that was my main reason why I thought Georgia was going to win. And I said that it was because the offensive line play was horrible for 4 weeks in a row against solid defensive lines, but nothing as good as Georgia. And they turned it around.
100%. 100%. I had mentioned the same thing. You know, we'd both agreed about Alabama, how bad their offensive line had been, and how that was kind of a key to the game of them, you know, being able to either A, hang with Georgia, or B, win this game. And the transformation was one that I can't remember a time where I've seen either a position group or a position player on a football field make that quick of a turnaround after sustained, consistent, bad play like we've seen from Alabama. But yeah, they gave Bryce Young plenty of time in the pocket. He sat back there and spun that thing quite a bit. The running game was good, so they were able to attack on all cylinders. offensively like they have in past seasons. And then, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that this is probably the best defense that Stetson Bennett has had to go against. Is it a different game if JT Daniels plays? Probably, you know, absolutely. But, you know, so he being Stetson Bennett had to make, you know, a couple more plays than maybe he's used to against some of these teams that they've played, because this Alabama defense is, you know, so good. Will Anderson was just absolutely destroying his opponents. He was in the backfield almost at will, making hits and hurrying Stetson Bennett. And, you know, a couple times it turned into an interception or a bad pass here or there. So he really was disrupting that passing game. But I think, like you said, a lot of the credit has to go to that play and the improvements that we saw in such a short time from that offensive line. You know, it was quite remarkable.
Yeah, it was shocking. And then I don't understand, like, what is the deal with JT? He's not hurt anymore, is he?
I believe he is, yeah.
JT Daniels is still hurt?
Yeah. They were talking about it on the broadcast.
I thought they just said that he's not going to go in. Because he was hurt earlier in the season, but I don't think he's like still hurt now. I have to look that up, but they just said, oh, he's just not playing. They're not putting him in
because
he hasn't played the back half of the season.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Kirby Smart fumbles the quarterback position yet again and has the wrong guy back there playing quarterback. Because JT Daniels, I think, that's the guy you took over Justin Fields, was it not?
No, that was Jake Fromm.
Jake Fromm, you're right.
But yeah, they got together. Him as a transfer. He transferred from USC and was playing at the beginning of the season. And then he had like a shoulder injury or hurt his foot, a couple injuries. And then, I mean, they were just crushing everybody. So Stetson Bennett was doing a good enough job. So they didn't really need it. I mean, he hasn't played a game or hasn't started a game since September 25th. I'm looking it up right now. Mm-hmm. But excuse me, I don't see that it's saying he's injured anymore. Like, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. He has to play if they're going to win a national title.
Absolutely. Absolutely and, has to.
I still think they have a good chance to win a national title. But because the defense, even in the second half, like after they gave up the touchdown to start the second half, they got four stops in a row. They were able to.
Yeah, I think the next score after that was the interception, was the pick six, was it not?
Yeah, well, after they gave up the score out of there, they drove pretty much the length of the field, and then he threw a pick in the red zone. They got a stop. Then they went a turnover on downs when, Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson were like shocked that he didn't kick a field goal. Like, oh, a field goal could do you good here. You're not gonna beat Bama kicking a field goal when you're down 14 points in the third quarter. And then they got another stop after that. Then he threw a pick six, and that was the decider there. But they had, they were getting stops, and the defense after they got drilled in the second quarter was keeping it a game, but Stetson Bennett couldn't do anything about that. But no, that was that. And then, so that led to, it was a pretty uneventful day from the chaos wise. Well, it started off with, we could get some good chaos here, but then with the Oklahoma State Baylor game, Baylor winning 21-16 against Oklahoma State. Spencer Sanders, probably his worst game ever as he's ever played at Oklahoma State, which is tough in that spot. But the defense battle wasn't like Baylor. Their offense played great. They took advantage of a bunch of short fields. The problem, obviously, is going to be Oklahoma State's red zone, not really red zone offense. Offense from goal to go situations from the 1 yard line. They ran seven plays because they kicked a field goal. Don't even know if they got a foot on any of them. They just couldn't do anything. It hurt that their starting running back was out, but the goal to go situations from the one was just an absolute killer for Oklahoma State. And then that last play looks like Jackson's going to get the corner, but the linebacker makes a great play, jumps a little too early, but Baylor wins. Great job by Dave Aranda. So that's kind of said, hey, you know what, maybe we get a little chaos going on here, see what happens. But that did not happen. Underdogs in the first six games were 5-1 straight up, so if you took the money lines there, that's that. But this was, we talked about this on Thursday, whenever we recorded last week, but this was a typical Oklahoma State performance. I think we both saw this coming. They tried to overcome it, they almost did, but typical Oklahoma State performance.
Yeah, 100% it was. And, you know, like you said, we've seen this kind of movie play out before where Mike Gundy gets his guys in a good spot where it looks like they're playing well, or maybe he can kind of finally get this thing, you know, going in the right direction by meaning, hey, look, you know, yeah, OU and Texas are going to leave the conference. And so maybe that makes us the top dog of the conference now, or at least one of them, or one of the teams that you're going to see, you know, in the championship game over and over and over again. And maybe that is the case, but for right now, it's he continues to get there or gets these big spots and then just not do anything with it. So you know, like you said, kind of a typical, I wouldn't even put it on Oklahoma State as a whole. I'd kind of just put it on Gundy, because he's been the guy that's been there for, you know, 15 years or whatever it is now. And we've seen this, you know, more than just one time. So you know, like I said, the writing was on the wall. You were hoping that Oklahoma State could kind of figure it out and, you know, end this season on a high note and keep things rolling the way they have. But at the same time, Baylor kind of kept doing what they've been doing all season as well and playing really good football. And so you think maybe that's going to be kind of the new case for Baylor. And maybe they'll be one of those teams that's kind of perennially in the Big 12 championship game with the conference shakeup.
Yeah, well, I'm shocked that LSU, I guess I would say USC in there, but they got Lincoln Riley. Like, how one in Florida, but they seem like they were all in on Billy Napier. How, like, I guess mainly LSU or even Oklahoma, how do none of these big schools go after Dave Aranda for a head coach?
Well, like, one of the big things that I kept hearing from LSU was that the AD was going big game hunting. He wasn't going to settle. And I use that word settle, you know, kind of tongue in cheek for kind of a lesser known coach. Yeah, Aranda's done a great job down there at Baylor and has really turned this ship around. But kind of like he did at A&M, where he went and signed Jimbo, when he came over to LSU, he was going to go for that big name and go for that big game hunting.
But Dave Aranda's not a lesser known guy at LSU. He was the defensive coordinator when they won the national title.
No, 100%. No, and that's why I said, when I say quote unquote lesser, okay, I just meant, you know, a guy that, you know, Brian Kelly's been to the national championship game. He's been to the playoff over and over again, kind of like, you know, put him in that same group with Jimbo, with, you know, I wouldn't put him in the same group as Dabo or Saban or any of those guys, but, you know, I mean, maybe throw him in there with Harbaugh, you know, the big name guys. And I think that's kind of the class and the bracket they were looking for.
I wouldn't even put him in the same class as Jimbo. Jimbo's a step above Brian Kelly.
Because he's won a national championship?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's done it. Yeah. He's done it. Harbaugh is probably the perfect guy for that. He is. But I mean, that Brian Kelly hire is still, but I'm just shocked that Dave Aranda is an LA guy too. So that seemed like a lot of links, but I'm shocked that Baylor was able to keep him for another season. Cause you got to think after this season, no matter what he does, even if he has, say he goes like 8-4 or whatever, the coaches schools are going to be wanting to hire Dave Aranda for what he's turned around there. I just don't get why you wouldn't go out and sign him. And they got a nice bowl game against Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. That should be a little interesting battle there. All right, so then the playoff, Cincinnati wins. Pretty nice game from them. So they defeat Houston in a dominating third quarter by the Bearcats. And then Michigan handles business against a bad Iowa offense. Pretty good defense. They rout them. So the playoff is set. The teams were set. Now, the seeding was pretty much after the Georgia game, everyone thought Bama was going to be the one seed. I don't know if I'm in the minority on this, but I don't understand how Michigan isn't the one seed in this thing.
I agree to a sense. Yeah.
Is like the thing I don't like about the whole playoff thing is how is Michigan not the one seed? They beat, so everyone's like, well, Alabama beat Georgia, the number one team.
Yeah, that's,
guess
that's
what? Michigan argument. Beat the number two team in the country last week by 14 points too, in as dominating performance as Georgia did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat Iowa. Yes, we all know Iowa can't score a lick, but they scored 42 points against a really, really, really good Iowa defense. Why would they not be number one? I don't understand that. And then the whole discussion of, oh, we can't have a rematch in the semifinal. We cannot have it. Who says that? Yeah. Who says you can't have a rematch in a semifinal? Who cares? If they're the second and third best teams in the country, they're playing. Who cares? Play. You know what? I'd rather see a rematch in the semifinal than a rematch in the national championship game, which we're probably going to get. So have them play in the semifinal. Like if you're ESPN, this is a gross, I think there's a big mismanagement on the matchups. You should want Michigan against Cincinnati, because then you're going to get Michigan against probably Michigan against Georgia or Alabama. And that's a way bigger, I think, draw than a Georgia Alabama game, when people will be like, oh, you know what? I saw this game a month and a half ago. Not that they're not going to tune in, but they might be a little more, the casual fan might be, well, didn't Alabama just beat them? What's going on there? I don't understand why they're like, oh, they can't play in the semifinal. They can't play in the semifinal. I think that's a dumb argument.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, in a sense, I actually tweeted out after the games on Saturday that I thought Alabama should be number one, and the ranking should play out pretty much how they did. But I also said, if not, then Michigan should absolutely be number one, Bama two, Cincinnati three, and drop Georgia down to four. And then you get, you know, Michigan versus Georgia. Pretty much the same matchups you're getting now, just different, you know, the different rankings. So, you know, I get that it is stupid to say, hey, we don't want this rematch in the semifinals. But I also kind of understand why they don't want that. But again, like it's just one of those like double-edged swords. Like your argument of saying, would you rather see it in the semifinal or in the play or in the final? 100% you'd rather see it in the semifinal. But then you would say, well, are these really the two best teams, or the two best teams just play in the semifinal? So like I said, you're going to get it screwed, you know, either way you go. But I think Michigan having an argument for being number one, I think is totally valid, because they did put on such a dominating performance against Ohio State and then absolutely blew Iowa out of the water. And then they've played well all season. I think their matchup against Georgia, anybody that's penciling in an all SEC championship game, I think is going to be sorely mistaken. I think Aiden Hutchinson is going to be a disruptor, just like we saw Will Anderson be for Alabama against Georgia. And I think, why am I forgetting the running back's name for Michigan?
Haskins.
Yeah. I think he's going to be, you know, just as good as we've seen thus far. So, I'm ready for an Alabama Michigan matchup, which would be, you know, one for the history books, you know, dating all the way back to 1900 when they're wearing the leather helmets. People saying, hey, we, you know, Michigan should have been one, so that we didn't get a matchup or a rematch in the championship game. Don't be so quick to assume that Michigan's just going to roll over and let Georgia pet their belly. I think Michigan's going to come out with a fight, with a punch. And I saw Georgia is an 8-point favorite so far. I'd take that 8 points for Michigan and sprinkle that money line right now.
I thought it was like seven.
Was it seven? Okay. Yeah. I think I saw the opening lines then that it was eight. But either way, you give me a touchdown for Michigan, I'll take that all day. I think they went outright. I say that right now.
Yeah, no, I like Michigan and the points as well. They've been playing the best football of anyone. It's 7.5 right now. They've been playing the best football the last month of the season. I am a little interested how the layoff affects them. I know that they're a team that is rolling right now, and they would love to play, obviously, this weekend. But interesting to see how the layoff goes out there. And look, the other game, the line 14 for Alabama-Cincinnati, with Alabama having lines against Arkansas when they've supposedly a great team, other teams in the 20s. this season, the line only in that game being 14 is pretty, I'd say, pretty surprising. I thought that would be a lot higher. But good for Cincinnati for making the playoff. I'm glad they made it. They deserved it after going undefeated. And now we'll get to see what they do against Alabama. They got a pretty solid defense. Desmond Ridder's a good quarterback. The offensive line, they're probably going to have to figure some scheming out for Will Anderson, because the fact that he's not a Heisman finalist is pretty shocking. Yeah. He's probably been the best player out there on the field all season. But look, I thought that line would be higher, but we'll have to see what happens there. And look, if Cincinnati gets blown out, I hope we're going to get the, oh man, see, I told you Cincinnati doesn't belong. They're going to get blown out by Alabama, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? It's something different. Notre Dame would have got blown out by Alabama by 3 scores like they always do. All these semifinals are blowouts, so let's get Cincinnati get blown out if they get a chance in there. That, you know, that's not a shocking statement for me.
Mm, yeah, no, not at all.
But the line of 14, interesting there. I think that's pretty low.
Yeah.
That is pretty low there. Also, what else happened from college football this week? I don't really know. Oh, without the playoff going on, but how about Quinn Ewers?
Yes, that is a shocker. But apparently, this was the plan all along.
I don't think this is a shock. I will say this: I don't think it's a shock that he transferred. If you look at it, so when he said, "Okay, I'm going to Ohio State and foregoing the year at Southlake." Like,
yeah.
He started, yeah, I think he got on campus like right at the beginning of August or whatever. He missed the first 2 or 3 weeks of training camp. And then, so there were like five or four stars at Ohio State in the quarterback room. When Stroud is playing as well as he did down the stretch, he was shaky there at the beginning, but he played pretty well down the stretch. He's a Heisman finalist. If he wins against Michigan and they beat Iowa, wouldn't you say there's a big time discussion that, like, going into the Michigan game, it was like, okay, he plays well here and they win, he's going to be the Heisman front runner.
Yeah,
like he was a Heisman front runner late, and the defense just didn't help him out. How are you going to say to Quinn Ewers if you're Ryan Day, yeah, you know what?
You're up next.
We're benching CJ Stroud, and you're going to be the starting quarterback. What does that also show the team, too? Like, hey, look at this guy Stroud. He won the job last year, played well, and now you're just benching him because this kid comes in and wants to start. Like, the Ohio State quarterback room was always going to see transfers. They've had two go in the portal. But like Quinn Ewers, you could totally see this coming late in the season that he was going to have to transfer if he was going to play next year.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all about the whole situation of CJ Stroud and him. I mean, we see big schools like this, you know, Ohio State, Clemson, Bama, you know, throw Florida in there, LSU, where they have an embarrassment of riches, where, you know, they have 3 or 4 or 5-star guys on their roster, and the starting guy is either a Heisman front runner or a guy. I mean, shoot, we saw it with Dwayne Haskins and Joe Burrow, right? Joe Burrow goes on to have one of the most, you know, one of the best college football seasons ever, win the Heisman. So it happens time and time again. But I think this situation is a little different because now you sprinkle in the NIL situation, where a couple of articles that I've read was that Quinn Ewers kind of, like I said, had this plan in place the whole time, where it was, if you're a high school student, if you forego your high school senior year to go sign at a school in Texas, you are not allowed to make money off your name, image, and likeness. But if you go to another school outside of Texas, you can. And then if you transfer back in, you know, you're of college age, quote unquote. So now you can make money again. So what it seems like is like Quinn Ewers, excuse me, was like, hey, I'm going to go grab the bag real quick at Ohio State, and then I'll transfer back to a Texas school back close to home. And I already got my, you know, 7 figures or whatever is reportedly that he made, and, you know, keep it moving. So I don't know if that was the situation or not. That's kind of what it seems like. And he had even said, because they live in Southlake. He goes to Carroll. Like they're good. They're good on money. But he said it was more of a situation of not needing the money, but going out and getting what is yours and not letting somebody hold you back, which he's 100% right. You know, these rules by Texas, I don't know if it's UIL or who's making these decisions of you can't make money off your name, image, likeness if you forego your senior season. But, you know, good for him for kind of going double guns up, you know, double birds to him and going and grabbing the bag before transferring back to either Texas A&M or Tech, which I think Texas is the front runner right now, which if he's as good as advertised and he gets in Sarkisian's offense, you know, maybe this is going to be something that Texas can really start rolling with a little bit here.
Well, but also in the things were allegedly in his UIL or his NIL deals is that he had to get guaranteed starts his second year to make money.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like he went to Ryan Day and was like, I need guaranteed starts. So I got to play.
So not even snaps, but starts.
Yeah, to start. Like, yeah, well, he took two snaps this year. I think he had two handoffs. But like he's like, I need guaranteed starts. So it's also like everyone's thinking he also made like $1 million or whatever. From what I read, it's also up in the air, like how much he actually made this year. Like, I think there were provisions in the contract that he could make up to $1 million that if he did all this, but like that could obviously change this year. Maybe it was for down the road or anything, but like this year, I don't think he really made $1 million on that. But yeah, he was like, I need guaranteed starts. And that's that. I will say this. I think he overplayed his hand, to be honest.
How so?
He's been told since however young, but that he's like the next greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
He thought that he was going to have a Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant situation or a Justin Fields, Jake Fromm, but I would say mainly, Bryant and Lawrence of that. Hey, you know what? I'm going to go in there and I'm going to come in storms, just going guns blazing. Kill it in practice, all this stuff. I'm going to make my way the starter when one or two things go wrong in the season, and then I'm going to be set up. And he just drastically overplayed his hand, because now he's the only thing that this helps him is getting a year closer to the NFL,
yeah.
Which you could say that's a big thing. But I just think he overplayed his hand that way. And then he goes, all right, at the end of the year, I think since I'm so good, I'm going to say I need guaranteed starts. And they're just going to say yes, because I'm the chosen one, blah, blah, blah. And Ryan Day was like, no, we're not doing that. You got to compete like everybody else here. And he's on the next, he's on the first plane out of Columbus. And I think he overplayed his hand that way, of thinking that they were going to cater to all of his needs. And that's not what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to pull a move like that at Ohio State. If you want to pull that move at, you know, maybe Miami of Ohio or, you know, maybe even Cincinnati.
You could do that at Texas Tech. You could do that at Baylor, like exactly. Any school that's not Alabama, Ohio State.
Those secondary schools.
Yeah. Like Purdue, he could have done that. He could have done that at Michigan State. You could have done that at Michigan State. Penn State, he could have done that. So no, that's why I think, that's why I think he overplayed his hand there. And then also you could look at it. You can look at it from a competitive standpoint too. I know he wants to play immediately, but you could say that he is running from the first chance of adversity he's had in his life. He's just saying, you know what? I don't want to fight for my job. If he's so good and everyone thinks he's better than CJ Stroud, he should be able to prove that in spring camp and then in fall camp. And then you know what? If you do that, you'll be the starter. You'll play split snaps. Now, you could kind of say, people could say that you ran from a challenge at Ohio State. And if you do sit out 1 year at Ohio State, guess what? You're going to be the starter when CJ Stroud goes pro after next year. And yeah, you only get one season of playing college football, but you're in a great offense with Ryan Day, a good quarterback, mentor. You could say he ran from this first sense of adversity he's had in his life.
100%. No, you absolutely could say that. You know, that's you finally get a chance to either nut up or shut up and see if you can play with the big boys. And what do? You take your ball and you go home. So, you know, I agree to that sense. But on the other hand, too, you could look at it. How many times have we seen where college football coaches, you know, maybe the best quarterback is waiting in the wings, but they're going to keep rolling with the guy that they have had the last year, or last 2 years or whatever it is, because he maybe might know the offense a little bit better, might be a little bit more experienced. And maybe isn't that, you know, technically physically more gifted than the next guy or whatever it may be. It's just the familiarity. The only time I can remember is who was the kid that transferred from Florida State to Alabama that Blake Sims ended up beating out?
Jake Coker.
Was it Coker?
No, I thought he was already there. I don't know. I think it might have been.
I think it might have been Coker. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it is Coker. So, you know, it takes sometimes an established coach like Saban to say, hey, look, you might not be the better guy, or you may be the guy that's a little bit more familiar, but I'm going to go with the guy that's, you know, better or whatever it may be. So, you know, you can make an argument both ways, but I definitely would lean a little bit more towards what you said about him saying, hey, you know, come compete for a chance to play and earn your chance. He's like, nah, you know what? I'd rather just go ahead and be handed something yet again.
Yeah, because look, if he goes to Texas, if he goes to any of the schools, A&M.
Shout out Tate Martell.
Well, people in Ohio State are calling him the next Tate Martell.
Yeah, I know.
Which,
yeah.
A little unfair, but it could still be seen if that's what he's going to be. But, I mean, he goes
Is
to
he
Texas.
He still playing college football?
He was like
I think
the
he was
third
at
stringer at UNLV.
Right? Yeah.
But he was also at the Ohio State-Michigan game, which was weird when UNLV had like a game. I don't know. It was confusing. Like if he goes to Texas, he's immediately going to be the starter. He goes to Tech, immediately going to be the starter. At A&M, I'd probably say he is the front runner to be the starter. I wouldn't say immediately he'd get the starting job, but I mean, he's better than Calzada and Haynes King, I would have to say. So, I mean, he's going to have a leg up there. So the three spots he's looking at, he's not going to, I mean, he's still going to have to work and produce, but I mean, he's immediately the best quarterback in the room. So, and why Tech is on the list, if people are wondering, is because he works out with Pat Mahomes and that facility over in Fort Worth or Southlake, whatever it is. So that's why Tech is on the list there. But interesting things from a guy that's been like promised as the next great thing. Things are already a little tumultuous, you would say, start to his career so far. And then I do find it funny that people are like, well, you know what, you could have played with Southlake this year and you left your teammates high and dry and everything like that. I mean, it's an interesting situation out there.
Yeah, but I mean, if I had the choice to...
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I mean, come on.
I think those people are pretty dumb. But
those guys are dumb. Those are the ones yelling at recruits on message boards because they didn't sign.
Yes, yes. All right, last thing college football-wise, the Bulls came out. I think the 29th probably got to be the most exciting bowl game of the We Don't Have Any Coaches Bowl, Oregon, Oklahoma. That's in the Alamo Bowl. I think that's a good bowl game. I'll actually tell you what, the New Year's Six game's pretty interesting. You don't have the big powerhouse programs other than Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. Like, there's some good matchups there. The one other thing I want to say is that, so everyone's like, oh man, look at what a 12-team playoff would have been like this year. Like, I've said this before, 12 teams does absolutely nothing. They're like, man, look how good it would be. So you're telling me you would want to watch Pitt versus whatever, whoever the Pitt versus Notre Dame for a playoff game? That's no one wants to watch that. I'm sorry. No one wants to watch that. Like, the 12-team playoff, it's not, it would be Notre Dame versus Pitt, Ohio State, Utah. We already get that. Baylor, Michigan State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State. Those would be the playoff. Who is clamoring for a 12-team playoff with those teams this year? You just bring in a bunch of 2-3 loss power conference teams. No one wants that.
100%. 100% agree. I mean, I've said it time and time again. I think eight teams is too many. I think 10 teams is too many. 12 teams is far too many. I think six is that sweet spot. But speaking of the 12 team playoff, though, do you follow Danny Cannell on Twitter?
No, God, no.
So this guy, shout out Florida State's academic board or whatever. He puts together a 12 team bracket and gives the first two teams a bye. And he said, okay, so this
how does
is
that work?
It doesn't. It doesn't. That's what everyone was roasting about. Because then when you go to the next round, it's like, well, okay, now there's two teams that need to play. So what's going to happen? And he realized what a dumbass he was because Big Cat was like, so what about round two? Does Alabama and Michigan get another bye? And Danny Cannell realized, hey, I'm a dumbass. He goes, no, they have to play two teams at the same time to make it fair. But it was just hilarious how he set that up. But so, yeah, no, 12 team playoff is like I said, it's ridiculous. Give me a 16 playoff and give me the first two teams got a bye and then you can roll from there. Does that work? Now I'm questioning my first two.
Yeah, no, that would work.
Okay.
I'm fine with staying at four.
Yeah. I mean, it's working. I mean, like you said, we even made the argument that bring back the BCS with the playoff scenario.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, I think that's kind of the best of both worlds because then you take all human element out of it and you leave it up to the, you know, and this is me saying it, leaving it up to the computers. You know how I don't like numbers.
I know.
I don't like computers deciding things. I'd be okay with that.
No, I think it is because even this year, look, Notre Dame, they're at five. Who do they beat? Nobody. They lost to the number four team in the country. And really, Ohio State, the two best teams they played. Well, you could say two of the three they lost to this season, and they're a two-loss team. I still think they're very good, and they'd beat Michigan, I'd say, probably half the times they played them, maybe 6 out of 10. Like, I think it's pretty even. But they don't really deserve to make the playoff this year if there was six teams. Or then it would be against Baylor. But, like, I just think keep it at four. You're trying to reward teams if you go to 12 that lost too many games in the regular season, and then what does it even matter? The regular season loses all of its luster. But all right, that's college football. We'll keep talking about that. NFL, we got some the win game last night was something. Really, I thought the Bills just totally mismanaged their offense last night. It was clear early on that Josh Allen, the wind wasn't really affecting his ball. And they just were like, you know what? We got to run it. We got to run it because it's windy out and the Bills aren't a running team. And then what do you know, when they started throwing it, they moved the ball down the field. So I thought they grossly mismanaged it. And really, the Patriots didn't do anything special. I know they threw three passes. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. They had one big run. And other than that, they really did nothing. But they did enough. The defense won them the game. And I just thought the Bills, you have a guy that's played in these conditions before. I don't understand why they didn't throw it more. I was surprised by that. I'm not surprised at the Patriots game plan because they weren't going to let Mac Jones throw the ball because they didn't trust him in the weather. But Josh Allen, he's played in that before. Maybe not to that extent of the win, but I mean, the guy's got a big enough arm to throw it. I was surprised by how bad their game plan was.
Yeah, it really was. It was kind of the, you know, I don't know if he even outsmarted is the right word, but they just kind of second guessed themselves, I guess. I mean, they still threw the ball 30 times. So, you know, that's still quite a bit in those conditions. But I agree. I think there were some spots where they could have thrown the ball and they decided to go with runs. So, you know, they definitely had a couple chances to, you know, obviously the Stephon Diggs drop touchdown. Dawson Knox had probably about three or four big time drops. I mean, I don't know. He was out there flexing, working, warming up without a shirt. Hey, buddy, maybe we'll put a shirt on next time and maybe put a little extra stickum on those gloves so you can catch these balls.
I will say that drop he had in the end zone, though, that was a good defensive play. Like, he caught it, and the guy, the way he rolled over the defender, knocked it out. That was a good play by the defender. But before that, I think he had Patriots plus three last night.
Maybe. He might have. So, you know, they definitely had some opportunities. And they just, like you said, Patriots, they really did not do anything big. They had the 67-yard run by Dwayne Harris that, you know, he took it to the house. And after that, they just managed the clock and just handled the ball and milked the clock as long as they could, or not milk the clock. Yeah, milk the clock, ran it down as long as possible, and won the game. It wasn't anything spectacular. It was a great game plan. I don't think anybody should be saying, "Oh, this is why Bill Belichick is such a genius." I mean, I don't think it takes, a genius to realize, "Hey, we have a guy that doesn't have a superb arm, so hey, let's just turn around and hand it to the three or four guys we have that have been running the ball pretty well the last 5 weeks, and then let our defense work, which is probably one of the top defenses in the league." You know what I mean? Let your strengths work for you, man. This guy's a genius. But I think Daboll really, really fumbled the bag here and mismanaged that game tremendously.
Well, and the thing too is with knowing that the Patriots are going to run it every down, the Bills obviously know that. And you could see early on, starting in the second quarter, the offense, or the Bills defense, was just over pursuing every run. Mm-hmm. They were trying to get 3-4 yard losses. Look at the linebackers on the sweeps. They're over pursuing. They're losing their lanes where they're supposed to be, and that opened up some chunk runs. Stevenson only averaged 3.3 yards a carry. He ran a 24. It wasn't like he was going gangbusters out there.
Right, wasn't getting chunk plays.
No, I mean he might have picked one off like 7 or 8 here or there, but everything, I mean, he was losing a ton of yards on there. It wasn't like they were doing anything. It was just, hey, we're going to let the Bills over pursue, and then when they blow something, we'll go out there and break one off. But I was surprised about that. Elsewhere in the NFL from the weekend, Ryan Washington is on a little bit of a run. Big game, a big game this week. Still the offense is, I don't know if you can trust the offense.
I think you can. I mean, Taylor Heineke, 70% completion percentage over the last four games, 5th in QBR the last four games. He does sometimes, not sometimes, he does have the what can be a back-breaking interception or just a bonehead interception. But I think we can trust the offense. Antonio Gibson leads the NFC in rushing yards. We've really found our footing with the rushing game. I don't know if JD McKissick's going to be able to play, but, they've leaned heavy on Gibson, and Jarrett Patterson only got one carry this week, but he's a guy that I feel comfortable carrying the ball. And I think you can't say you can lean heavy or rely on the offense, but I don't think you should discount the offense either.
All right, I'm just looking at scored 17 points the last two games.
No, I know, but that's
that's my main reason for it. And the Heineke almost blew the game on the last drive. If that right guy up, holds on to the ball, we're
it's game over. No,
it's
doubt.
It's game over, done deal, and it's a totally different. That's how a bounce goes your way. Like that was a good interception luck there that it went off the guy's hand.
No, 100% agree. 100% agree. I mean, I clenched up a little bit there when that happened as well. But, I get it. We're not putting up prolific numbers offensively, but they're doing enough to get the job done. And the defense is playing fantastic right now, getting off the field on third downs finally, holding teams to a lot of field goals in the red zone. So, things are clicking right now. But like you said, you definitely got a big test, a big game this weekend for Washington and for Taylor Heineke to finally show that he is the best quarterback that wears the jersey number 4. You already picked off one guy last week. Next guy is coming up now.
What else was I going to say something else about that game? I don't know. I don't think so. That was a big win for them. Then continuing, look, I've been saying it all year. The AFC North is a bad division. Proved it again this week with the Chargers going in and blowing the doors out of the Bengals. I know the Bengals did come back, then turn over that fumble return for a touchdown, kind of flipped the game. But still, you could even look, the AFC North is bad too. Just look at Pittsburgh, Baltimore. Both of those teams, I know Baltimore's 8-4, but they're bad. They're a 500 team, I think, as I've been saying. They're a bad team. And the Chargers-Cincinnati game is the team that covered the week before against the team that they didn't cover. That was one of those specials right there.
Yeah.
The biggest thing about the Ravens in Pittsburgh is the 2-point conversion. And everyone's like, oh, do you go for it? Blah, blah, blah. Do you go for it? No one is – whenever all these talking heads are saying, oh, I would kick it. I have Justin Tucker and playing overtime. or we got it. Like the play worked. Andrews alligator armed it, I think. Like you could see that still shot. He's not stretching full out for it. But the thing that nobody is saying is John Harbaugh after the game told you why he went for two. He said Marlon Humphrey was hurt. We didn't have enough DBs. We were getting killed in the passing game. We were going to get killed. I thought you were going to get killed in the passing game. So I'm going for it. They're like, he told you why he went for it. And people are trying to come up with other reasons for it. I think just listen to what the coach said. He told you why he went for it. I don't understand why it's so hard to make up. Whoa, why would you go for it? He told you why he went for it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, I agree. I think Mark Andrews could have made a better play on the ball. I think Lamar Jackson could have put the ball on him a little bit better.
Yes.
So, you know, and when all these talking heads are saying, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? They take the easy route of, oh, I have Justin Tucker. Let's play for overtime. Whereas you saw directly into the mind of a head coach, a Super Bowl winning head coach saying, look, we took all of these factors in. We didn't have enough DBs. Marlon Humphrey's out. He's, you know, maybe arguably our best defensive player, one of our best defensive players. You know, and so, you know, you when you sit on the couch or sit in front of the screen and watch the game, you take everything surface level. But then when you're actually in it, then you see all the layers below it. So 100%, I think going for two was the right call. And they had the right play call too, just bad execution. And so, you know, that's just the name of the game sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't think that game should have came down to that play. I think Baltimore is a better team than Pittsburgh. I don't know how that game was even remotely close.
Because they're not good. They're not very good team.
But yeah, no, neither are the Steelers, though. That's what I'm saying.
I think
the Ravens are better than the Steelers. But also, too, with that, I agree. I don't think the Ravens are as good as people might think. And I don't know. I don't even know how good people think they are. But I think that might even be overrating them, depending on who you talk to.
Lamar's just played bad the last couple, 3-4 weeks. The offense has been bad. But yeah, I've been calling the Ravens a fraud for the good half of the year. But other than that, I didn't really think anything else in the NFL this weekend was that really exciting. I know everybody loves Gardner Minshew. He beat a bad Jets team.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, there was really, again, leading into the week, it was going to be a, the Lions Niners. Get their first win.
Yeah, Lions get their first win.
So that's exciting for Dan Campbell.
Another scratcher of a loss, I think, for the 49ers.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of how the 49ers and the NFC is going right now.
Yeah.
You would have to say there. But look, I've been very critical. I don't think Dan Campbell's a good game manager and all that stuff. But you go watch the videos of them in the locker room. Those guys buy in and they believe what he is. So if you get that from your head coach, that's a start, and he just got to put the right people around him, maybe get Anthony Lynn off the offensive staff. His offensive coordinator, he's already taken away play calling abilities from him. But if you get guys buying in, that's the biggest thing. And they're still fighting every week at 0-10, 0-10-1 for you. And they look, I think the Lions wouldn't you agree, should have about 2 or 3 wins this year?
Absolutely.
That should not have been their first one. They should have beat the Ravens. They should have beat the Vikings earlier in the season. Potentially the Steelers. You could throw the Browns in there, but I'd probably say no there. And then probably the Bears on Thanksgiving, but that should have not been their first one. They've played hard. They've just had some bounces and some coaching go against their way. But the NFL slate this weekend, I would say looks a lot better if you are, if you're a fan, which is a good thing, because last week it was pretty bleak on Sunday, especially the noon slate. This week you got Baltimore, Cleveland, Dallas, Washington, San Francisco, Cincinnati's pretty good. Buffalo, Tampa's good. And then the Monday nighters, the Rams, the Cardinals. So we get some better games out there this weekend because last weekend was pretty tough.
Yeah.
Like on Sunday, I was watching the F1 race. It started at 11:30, and I mean the race went a lot longer than expected because of a couple of red flags and everything. But there was nothing like, man, you know, I'm missing a big NFL game. Like I feel like I'm missing something here. It for me, it was pretty. It didn't seem like there was anything big going on out there. But did you happen to see any of the highlights of the race on Sunday? or see any of it?
I didn't see any of it. I saw that Maxson and Louis are tied going to the last race this weekend.
Yes, they are tied going to the last. Let me tell you, if you have nothing going on, you need to find the race highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes, was this? This might have been, I don't know if it was the best race of the season, but I will say it was probably the most chaotic race of the season. And the track is so narrow, the Saudi Arabia track, and it's so fast. Like, things got off to a good start. And then Schumacher hits it in the wall, and he gets the red flag. And then the second restart, Max and Lewis kind of fight. Max kind of drives Lewis off the road. And then there's another red flag right after that. So then Max was in first, has to go back to third for the third restart of the race. And then that move, Max cuts on the inside of Lewis and Ocon and gets the lead. And then they're battling towards the end of the race. And there was one, I think it was lap 36. Max and Lewis are headed to turn one. And to be, I want Max to win the championship, but Max really didn't even make an attempt to turn his car. Like, he tried to turn his car, but they just both went in the runoff and Lewis goes behind him. So then, if you don't give him enough space and you don't really try and give him any room, you're going to have to give them the space back that they would have gotten. So after a couple of laps, they're like, hey, Max, you have to give your space back to Lewis. Now, this is the really controversial spot here. So the FIA tells Red Bull they have to give the spot back to Lewis. They tell Max first, and they're like, Max, use it strategically. So he lets them pass on the back straight so then he could get DRS. Well, Max is slowing down on like a 200-mile-an-hour straight. Lewis is behind him, doesn't know why Verstappen is slowing down, but also in a weird racing way, like, slows down too as Verstappen is slowing down. Like, Lewis slows down too because the FIA was telling Mercedes at that moment that he's letting him pass. But Lewis didn't know that, and he just stops kind of with Max. So then Max like continues to slow down. And as Lewis says, brake checks him. And Lewis, as he's trying to pass him, just crashes right into the back left tire of him. Hurts his front wing. Max is lucky he didn't get a puncture. Lewis is also lucky his front wing didn't fly off. So they have a crash, and then Max takes off. And then he lets Lewis pass again on another thing. And then there's a cheeky pass where he gets him right by. But the drama in the race with the brake check and when to pass and everything, it was chaotic.
It was electric,
chaotic. None of the guys on Sky Sports knew what to say. Everybody was just in awe. I mean, for an entertainment for a race, it was remarkable. And the whole brake checking thing, Lewis is saying that Max is crazy. He's doing this all year, which I like Lewis. I'm getting a little tired of his whining. I'm also, but Lewis is an all-time whiner. Max, also an all-time whiner.
Yeah.
So they're both in a whine-off going on right now. But the whole brake-checking thing was unbelievable. He's saying he's a crazy driver. Someone's going to get hurt. Whatever. It's pretty remarkable. Yes, they're tied going into the last race of the season, which is Sunday morning, 7 a.m., Abu Dhabi. And if they're still tied, so if they don't get any points, Max will win the title because he's got more race wins. I think this is what everybody wants going into the season. I don't really know who has the upper hand going into Abu Dhabi. I would have to say that Lewis is probably going to win just because the car looks really good right now. But I don't know. It's exciting. It's exciting. The race on Sunday was great.
Yeah, no, like I said, this is exactly what you want. It come down to one final race, one kind of, give it your best go and see who comes out on top. And so I think this has all the recipes, the recipe for another great race to finish up the season.
Yeah. And for people who have been watching, I know probably this year is the first year most people have launching, maybe last year. But this is the first really title decider since 2016 when Lewis went up against his teammate Nico Rosberg. Ever before that, Lewis just pretty much wrapped it up with two or three races to go. So also very exciting. My idea was, is that since they're tied, they need to both race in a Haas. Mazepin gets the Mercedes seat. Schumacher, put him in the Red Bull for this race and let Lewis and Max drive that Haas car around that hasn't had any developments the whole season. And we'll truly find out who the best race, who the world champion is out there. That's what I, or if they want to do that, just have a sprint race, 15 laps in a Haas, and we see who can be the title, win the title. I think that's how the title should be decided, but they're not going to do that.
Make them drive their own personal car. Like, however they drive to the track, make them race that car.
I don't even know what car they, I don't think they drive to the track.
Whatever car they drive when they're at home.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know if Verstappen owns a car. He probably does, but he lives in Monaco. Do you really need a car driving around Monaco?
Yeah, probably not.
So he probably does own a car.
Maybe a Vespa.
Well, Charles Leclerc obviously drives a Ferrari around Monaco, but like, what car is he going to drive? A Honda engine? Is he going to drive a little street Honda car? I don't know what Verstappen is going.
Verstappen definitely seems like a Honda Civic type of guy.
That would be pretty funny if he's driving a Honda Civic around Monaco. But I don't really know what he would drive, because they're just energy drink sponsors them.
Yeah.
And they got the Honda engine. But all right. Is there anything else that we happen to miss?
I don't believe so. No, I think that was all the excitement from the weekend.
Yeah, I don't really know what else happened. Tiger, he's coming back, or he's hitting balls. Which
we
is
talked
exciting.
About the MLB lockout last week.
We just kind of said about it. We also didn't mention the Seager signing last week for the Rangers, which is, I think, is a big move. But
yeah, we did.
Did Seager? I thought we just talked about Semien.
Oh, maybe it was Semien, yeah.
Yeah, because we just said the lockout, and I think we forgot Seager. That's a big move for them.
Huge. I mean, 10 years, what was it, 10 years, $375 million? No opt-outs?
Yeah, was it 375 or 325?
One of those.
I think 325.
325. But yeah, I mean, we talked about John Daniels saying that, you know, they could add $100 million to the payroll. I think they've done that in a big way. Obviously, adding John Gray to the pitching staff as well, which is a decent 4 or 5 guy. So we shall see.
They still got like $25 million left for next year. They've only spent $75
million. Yeah.
So they still got money out there to spend after the lockout. After the lockout. All right. One. Have you seen? When I was in Cleveland, on the first Saturday I was there, my cousin and uncle, we were watching football all day, and we wanted to watch one of the night games, and my cousin was like, hey, let's all watch a movie tonight. And we were kind of like, all right. And she goes, you've been watching the game all day for like 4 hours, 5 hours. And I was like, Hannah, we've been watching multiple games for multiple hours. We can continue that, but all right, we'll watch a movie. So we watched King Richard.
Yeah.
Have you seen it or not?
Yeah, no, actually, we watched it. I think we watched it the weekend it came out. I kept meaning to bring it up to you, but yeah, we have.
What did you think of King Richard?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good. You know, everyone always talks about how crazy their dad was. When I say crazy, I just mean like, you know, he was dead
helicopter set. Overbearing.
Yeah, dead set on them becoming stars and dead set on them becoming the best tennis players that they could be. And whether you agree with it or not, you know, I don't know how much the movie glorified or kind of sensationalized it, but right or wrong, I mean, he got the job done, right? So I thought it was pretty good. The one thing that bothered me, not about the storyline or the plot or anything like that, but Will Smith sounded like Bobby Boucher from The Waterboy. That was the only thing that bothered me, because you listen to videos of the real guy talk, and he sounds nothing like that. And all of a sudden, Will Smith sounds like I said, like Bobby Boucher from The Waterboy, but they're living and growing up in Compton. It was the weirdest accent I've ever heard him bring on for a movie.
Okay, I don't think I've ever heard the dad speak before. I didn't notice anything. I also thought it was interesting. Like, the overbearing parent is going to, I think... Look, I thought Will Smith as an actor was good in it. I thought he was
no, for sure, no, absolutely. I thought, like I said, that was
yeah,
just
his
one
voice.
Thing that stuck out to me.
I do think it's also 2.5 hours. I thought it was pretty long, but I do wonder how many people watch this and are like, oh, well, you know what? It worked for this guy and his daughters. Now I'm going to try and do this. But the one thing that he did that I think is not like, he made them like, he did say you still have to do your school. You had to focus on other things other than tennis.
Yeah.
Like it was still like, hey, work hard on tennis. But like they had to do like other things to get then practice tennis and stuff like that.
Yeah, tennis wasn't the only thing that he was focused on.
Yes.
It was like the main thing. And yeah, he, you know, had them out in the pouring rain and made them hit balls or whatever it was. But like you said, they still had to focus on school. That was one of the main things that they showed in the movie was when Venus was supposed to go play in juniors. He said, you know what? No, we don't need that. She still needs to focus on school. She still needs to focus on being a kid because he didn't want her to turn out like, was it Capriati who got arrested for smoking weed or something like that? So that was, you know, shocking. And it wasn't like it was just these two that he focused on. You know, he had other daughters that lived with him. One was the valedictorian of her high school and going on to a big time university and things like that. So he still had what you would call priorities in place that were outside of tennis.
Yes, and that was, and also they had. He also would say, "Look, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to do it."
Correct. Yeah,
it wasn't like I'm forcing you to do this.
And that was one of the biggest things that stuck out to me because, as you know, a youth coach, that I see tons of kids come in and out of our facilities, tons of kids come in and off of our teams. You can tell when mom and dad want it, and you can tell when the kid wants it. And when you talk, you know, like I said again. Just going based off the movie, which Venus and Serena were a part of making, those girls wanted it just as much, if not more, than their dad wanted it. And that's the biggest sign is when they're like, you know, you could tell that they were killers. You could tell that they wanted to go out there and demolish anybody and everybody that they played. And that they wanted it, like I said, just as much, if not more. And you can tell almost instantly with a kid when they're, you know, throwing, hitting, whatever, when I, you know, relating it back to baseball. When a kid comes in, you know, who wants it? Does the dad want it? Does mom and dad just sign the line and say, hey, my kid is going to play? Or is the kid saying, hey, I want to go play. Hey, I want to get better. Hey, I want to put in this extra work. And that was one of the things that really stuck out was they both, that was everything they wanted and then some.
Yes, I agree on that. All right, we'll be back on Thursday with some NFL picks for you this weekend. And hope everybody has a good week. We will talk to you then.